It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Our topic today is motocross, and I have a couple of amazing interviews for you. This is a sport about dirt bikes going fast over rough terrain, and kids as young as 3 years old are doing it. In Sutton, a family has their own track, and we'll hear from a dad who has seen his 8-year-old son fly over an 80-foot jump on a motorcycle, crash, and then do it again. We'll talk to that brave boy who is now heading to a national motocross championship. And we'll learn about motocross here in Anchorage, where youth and adult races go on through the summer. It's a sport I knew nothing about, but it has an active Alaska community of people who are incredibly committed. Well, for the first half of the show, I have a father and son team here who are really into this sport, and sounds like it's a huge family focus, and both competitors. Jason Nunn is the president of the Anchorage Racing Lions. Thanks for being here, Jason.
Thank you for having us.
And Jason's son Justin, is 15 years old and has been racing, how many years, Justin?
I'd say around like 9 or 10 years since I was 6.
Amazing. So, yeah. Okay, so we want to hear all about that. So just to start with, Jason, for people who like know nothing about this sport, and maybe we've seen a little bit of it on TV, it's like, you know, what the focus of it is riding dirt bikes and competing, like,
absolutely,
yeah,
competitive racing. We do it in different classes, ranging from 4 years old, which would be the 50 cc's. We have about 12 or 13 different classes. We have the vet classes, senior vet classes, masters, and we also have 250 expert, 450 expert, intermediate.
All, I mean, the way those from, numbers are the size of the motor on the bike.
Absolutely, yes. The 50 cc's is the little itty bitty bikes, and then you have two
450
strokes.
Is a pretty big bike for a dirt bike.
450 is the biggest one we have out there, and that's what most of the pros race.
Okay. And just to get it out of the way, I mean, this is perceived as being a very dangerous sport. I mean, that's how people think of it.
It is. Motocross has been labeled by a lot of different organizations as the toughest sport in the world. You are racing a 250 plus pound bike going at 40 miles an hour for 20 minutes straight. It takes a lot of endurance and a lot of power to do that.
Yeah. That's a really good point, because just because it's a motorized sport doesn't mean it's not a muscle sport, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. So what are the main skills that you need to develop to be good at this?
The main skills is coordination, endurance, breath. You have to be able to breathe on the bike. You can't hold your breath. Balance. There's a lot of variables into motocross.
And you're like going over jumps, and you're going like, loose sand, is that a big part of it?
In Kenai, it was. We just came from a state race in Kenai, and they have a lot of sand there. And when you're in the sand, you have to stay on the gas. You have to stay on the throttle, keep the bike moving, or you fall over.
Yeah.
If you lose momentum, it's all bad.
So tell me how you got into this.
I got into this from a friend of mine. When I first moved over to the south side of Anchorage, I went to my local Anchorage Yamaha shop, and I walked in just looking around.
Were you already into bikes at that point? Like before?
I was into street bikes, not motocross. And I walked into the shop, and the parts manager at the counter, I just kind of hit it off with him. His name was Jason Lockett. He no longer lives in Alaska. But I hit it off with him, and we started talking, and he told me that he was into motocross. And instead of buying a street bike, he talked me into buying a dirt bike.
Oh, wow.
So I bought the dirt bike knowing nothing about dirt bikes, and I started riding with him and had a few injuries here and there. And one day, I didn't even know there were races. And one day he talked me into coming out to a race. So I came out and I signed up. I jumped on the bike, and the rest is history. I was hooked. After the first race, I was hooked.
Does racing really greatly enhance your excitement for, because of like just the competitive aspect?
Absolutely. The competitiveness is absolutely incredible. When you're racing and you see that guy right in front of you, and you're like, I can pass this guy. I can pass this guy. It's very addictive.
Yeah.
You pass one guy, and then you see the next guy, and you, hey, I can pass him too. It's an adrenaline rush like no other.
Yeah, yeah. So is that how you feel, Justin, when you're out there? Because you've been doing it since you're a little kid.
Yeah. I mean, Usually, sometimes I'll get a really bad start, and I'm really good at going through the pack. I'm able to make moves quick, but sometimes, you know, I'll get tunnel vision, and the guy won't be in front of me, and I'll follow too long, and I won't realize how much time I only have, because you only have a certain amount of time.
So there's a lot of strategy in this. It's not just
It's not just like you're going out there and just riding direct. So many people at school tell me, like, oh, you're on the bike. The bike's doing all the work, and it's really not how it works.
Uh-huh. So how much, like, how long does one of these races goes that a youth would be involved in?
Well, you, like, in the pro series, there's, like, their motos are timed. They go 30 minutes and then plus two laps, but we have, like, it's usually a range between 5 to 7 laps, and it's usually 15 to 20 minute races.
Mm-hmm.
But for the little guys, it's, I'd say it's like, what, 10?
Yeah, about 10 minutes.
Yeah, about 10 minutes for like the 50s and 65s. And 85s and up usually go 15 minutes plus.
So when you did your first race, you were like 5 years old. Do you remember that?
I don't think I remember my first race.
Uh-huh.
But I just remember, like, I rode a couple times with me and my my stepbrother Tyler, and we rode a couple times, and one day my dad was like, hey, we're going out to the races this weekend. And honestly, I was really terrified. I was terrified, yeah. And I didn't know what I was getting myself into.
So how long did it take before you were totally into it?
I think, like, the first year, me and Tyler mm-hmm. were kind of, like, iffy about it, because, like, my dad was always honest, like, come on, we have to win. We have to, you know, he wanted us to do good, and we were just kind of freaked out about it. But I think, like, a good, like, year into it, I really liked it.
So winning probably helped?
Yeah, I didn't start winning, I'd say, till, like, my fourth or fifth year in, just because it took a lot for me to get my confidence up and, like, want to jumps and just learn how to move quicker.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see. I mean, in watching it, it does look scary, like going over the jumps and getting a lot of air and all that. I mean, you'd have to get over just sort of the fear factor, I would think.
Yeah, because certain jumps have these things called kickers, and it kicks the bike weird. And, you know, when you're little, it happens to you once and you don't want to do it again. I would get terrified over one jump.
Uh-huh.
Literally, I would jump any jump on the track, but there'd be the one jump that I don't want to hit because I've wrecked on it and I don't want it to happen again.
Yeah.
But once you get older, and I think you get quicker, you kind of just realize that it doesn't really get to your head.
Uh-huh. And then what was your first win? Tell me about that.
My first win was, I don't know, like maybe 3, 4, 5 years ago. I was in the 85 novice class. And
so that's 85cc bike, so a fairly small bike.
Yeah, and I wouldn't really say it was a moto win. It was an overall win. So my finishes out of both races got me the overall. I went second place.
Oh, I see.
And I had no idea I got the overall. I thought I got like second or third, and the trophy guy came up to me with a first place trophy, and I was so stoked. I went up to my dad. I was like, look, I won the class today, and I was pretty happy.
Uh-huh. So from then on, you're probably not going to turn back.
What was that? Sorry.
From then on, you're probably not going to turn back. No. I mean, you're definitely hooked at that point. So and what's the next progression? I mean, you keep moving up to bigger bikes?
Just moving up to the better class, the next class, because I was able to win a championship that year. I won the championship for that class, and I haven't won a championship since, but I've just been moving up classes and slowly progressing and just getting more wins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's your – do you have a goal of where you want to go with this, or is it just sort of going out on the weekend and having fun?
I don't really know. It's more of just like me going out and racing with my friends and just having fun. Uh-huh. I don't really know if I have a particular goal. Like, of course, going pro would be literally a dream for any kid that's on a bike, and especially in Alaska.
Yeah.
But as of right now, I don't think there's a specific goal. Well, the goal for this year is to win the 250 Intermediate Championship.
Uh-huh.
But
do you think you'll do it?
I think I can.
All right.
I think I have a very good chance.
So are you into working on the bikes too?
Yes. I help a lot doing bike maintenance, pressure washing the bikes, air filters, oil.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
now that he's old enough, he does all the maintenance. Dad sits back and watches.
Yeah.
I would imagine that, Jason, that would just take a huge amount of time because, well, how many bikes do you have with your boys and with you?
We just have two right now, but there was a point where we had seven bikes.
Oh, my gosh.
And washing and maintaining all those bikes is a nightmare, and it takes a lot of time.
Yeah.
And I used to have to do it on my own because my boys were so small.
Mm-hmm.
Now they're at the age where they can do their own maintenance. You know, like I said, dad gets to sit back and watch and relax. I've done it for years. Now it's their turn.
Uh-huh. Do you enjoy that kind of mechanical work? I mean, if you didn't, like, it could be the wrong sport for you, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, when we buy a bike off the showroom floor, for us, it's not ready to race. We have to redesign the suspension, the exhaust, the wheels, the tires. We don't race stock bikes. And I don't think any racer races a stock bike. They all make modifications to it to suit them.
Mm-hmm.
Race tech suspension is very important to us. It takes a lot of the work out of racing the bike. So if you make a mistake on a jump, that very expensive race tech suspension will soak up some of the landing so you're not hitting so hard, and it makes it a lot easier for you to race.
Huh. So you have to know what these aftermarket parts are, how they're going to be perform. That seems like there's a lot of knowledge involved in that.
Absolutely. YouTube and Google.
Okay.
You know, that's a lot of it. And, you know, we also watch pro motocross on TV, and they always give us pointers and ideas of what settings you would need to do for the bike. And we kind of mimic that.
Right. Because the tech is such a big part of it. You'd really be focused on that all the time.
Yeah. If you don't have confidence in your bike, you're not going to have confidence on the track.
Mm-hmm.
You have to know that that bike is going to perform properly, and you have to trust that bike. And if you even feel that your clutch is slipping or the bike just isn't running right that day, you're going to have bad motos. You're not going to have a fun day.
Mm-hmm.
So the bike has to be in tip-top shape for you to have the confidence to go out there on the track and know that that bike's not going to hurt you unless you make the mistake.
Mm-hmm. What is moto? I mean, does that mean like one race? Or?
Yeah, we call them motos.
Uh-huh.
So we do a two-moto format. You'll race like Justin. He races 250 intermediate. He'll race two motos that day. He'll race one in the morning and one at night. And same with everybody else in the class. And whoever has the best outcome out of those two motos is where you place for the day. So if Justin goes, say, second place and first place, and the guy behind him goes, first and second, Justin will get the overall for the day because the second moto is more important than the first moto.
Okay, yeah.
I had a better finish the second moto, I get the overall. And each position is placed on by points. So, like, a first-place position would be, like, 25 points. You would earn 25 points for a first-place position. Second place, you would earn, 22 points?
22 points.
22 points. Mm-hmm. And then third, 20 points. And it's just, like, it's going, like, 2 points down each position.
Okay, yeah.
And points is really a big thing because every point counts. Literally
every how long is the track? So you're going around the track multiple times for each moto,
yes,
right?
The track is about a three-quarters of a mile.
Okay.
I mean, it's Kincaid is a pretty big track.
Uh-huh.
So is Kenai. Kenai is a pretty big track. Fairbanks has a really good track. They own their property, and they have a good track and really good dirt. I haven't been to Fairbanks in a few years, so we're getting ready to go to Fairbanks July 1st for the 4th and 5th state race. So I'm excited about that. Mm-hmm. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, and you're pretty much just riding these bikes on tracks and doing the same track over and over again, so you're getting to really know it really well, right?
Absolutely. We do.
Must be a big home court advantage in this sport.
Yeah, we do the same track, but like last weekend, I had my operator, Andrew Hill, go out there and make track changes. So we'll try to change up the track so you don't get too used to it.
Uh-huh.
It's just very time consuming to change a track. You're talking about moving
heavy equipment, yeah.
A lot of dirt. You got to move a lot of dirt around, and it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just maintaining the track is a lot of work, but to make track changes is a lot more work and more equipment.
Yeah. The Outdoor Explorer, we're talking about motocross today, something we have never touched on. And I'm like learning along with you because I just really realized I knew nothing about this sport other than just sort of seeing a little bit of it on TV. Really, a lot to it. I'm really interested. My name is Charles Wolforth, and my guests today are Jason Nunn, who is the president of the Anchorage Racing Lions, and Justin, his son, 15-year-old up-and-coming racer, who sounds like he's done really well in youth racing. Let's talk about that Kincaid track. It's been there for quite a while. It's sort of in that area that's sort of a sand dune area over there, sort of just south of the skiing area.
Correct.
Advantages and disadvantages. I guess noise is always an issue for you guys, right? Is that something, you know, like the neighbors not being irritated by the noise and that kind of thing?
Yeah, the noise is an issue. Throughout the years, we've cooperated with municipality and Parks and Rec quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Our track is a little bit lower than ground level, so and we have the trees around, and we try to face the jumps to where the exhaust is facing towards the water, not towards the homes.
Oh, interesting.
But we do get some complaints once in a while about the noise.
Mm-hmm.
That's why we made an agreement with Parks and Rec to keep the track closed on Monday and Tuesday to keep our neighbors happy.
Okay.
We do racing only on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do a race during the week, but the track is open to the public Wednesday through Sunday as long as there's not a race.
So just anybody who has a bike can come and try it out?
Anybody that has a bike can come out. There's just certain rules that are posted. You have to wear a helmet. You have to have the proper gear on. There's no ATV four-wheelers allowed on the track, only race machines, no side-by-sides on the track. And we just try to be extremely cautious and respectful of our neighbors. Because back in the 70s, when that track first opened, there was no homes around there.
Right.
Well, now, right across the street,
there's great big ones. Yeah.
There's big million-dollar homes. And these are people that paid a lot of money for their home. So we want to respect them and respect the, you know, the noise ordinance and try to keep it down. And we close at 8:30. That way there's no noise late at night.
Right, right.
But you really can't hear the dirt bikes past the track, past the gates with the trees and how low the track is.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really hear the dirt bikes.
So it sounds like you've made some improvements out there.
Absolutely. We've been working on improvements every year since I've been president. This year we got a grant from municipality. It's the Parks and Rec Foundation. I forget the exact name of it, but we got a pretty decent size grant to
Anchorage Park Foundation.
Yeah, to pave the road coming in, so it'll keep the dust down and replace all the fencing. The fencing is pretty old and torn up. And next year, the Huddle Corporation has also been helping us with another grant for 2018 to sift the big rocks out of the dirt, bring in nice new dirt that's that's certified for the track, and possibly here in the near future, get us a water well so we can water the track regularly and keep the dust down.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of the complaints we get is the dust.
Do you prefer it when it's wet anyway? I mean, is that...
Absolutely.
Yeah.
When the track's wet and it's tacky, you get better traction. There's no dust in the air, so your visibility is better. When the track is dry and you're racing on a dry track, if you're not out front, it's really hard to see where you're going and see the obstacles in front of you and not make a mistake.
Yeah, interesting. So, Justin, I was interested in, you mentioned racing with your friends and just how big the sort of community of racers are. It sounds like you've got some friends you see there all the time, but do you see a lot of other people or how, you know, how big are these races that you're in?
Well, for the 250 intermediate class, it's in between novice and expert. So when most people sign up, most average people, they'll sign up for, you know, the 250 intermediate class, the average class. And there's anywhere from, I'd say, 8 to 17 people, like, every time, every weekend. So, and
you'll know some of them, and there might be a few that you don't.
Yeah, I know a lot of people that are in my class, like, not maybe close friends, but I know everyone that's in that class. But I have a couple, I have, like, one of my main friends that is in that class that races with me.
What's the, like the, you mentioned you have to wear the right gear, sort of what are the safety issues you have to be concerned about? I'd actually be interested in both of you addressing that. Maybe you start, Justin. What do you think? I mean, you don't want to get hurt. You could get real hurt on a motorcycle. Like, how are you, like, making sure that you're safe out there?
Well, the main gear that I wear, I have, you know, my helmet, my boots, my gloves. I think goggles are one of the most important things you can wear. Knee braces. Knee braces are big. I wear knee braces. And like chest protectors and neck brace, like you don't have to wear them, but it's more preferable. I don't like neck braces, but I wear a small chest protector that fits my body under my jersey. But
have you had any spills or accidents where you got hurt at all?
Yeah, a few years back training with Ben LeMay. I'm a pro motocross racer. I actually, the training session didn't even start yet. I was two laps out on the track and I broke my wrist. And then I've also torn my rotator cuff. I did that last summer.
From spilling the bike and falling
off. Yeah, and it was just it was weird because it was an easy fall too. I just fell right on my shoulder and it just,
Yeah. Tell me about that. You don't want to see your kid hurt, obviously.
Yeah, I try not to get too excited or freaked out when he does go down. I've seen Justin take some hard spills. But the training session with Ben LeMay was kind of comical because just 24 hours earlier, we were training with Ben LeMay at Rival Race Park out in Palmer. And Ben was working with Justin. It was the end of the day. We were putting bikes away. And my youngest daughter was playing on a chair and she fell off and hit her head on the foot peg, and they have sharp pegs on those bikes. And so we had to go to the hospital and she got stitches. The next morning, he had another session with Ben LeMay. And I show up to the track. I tell Justin, go ahead and go out there and get a couple practice laps while Ben is getting ready. And he wasn't even two laps in and he just missed the jump a little bit. And it was a compound fracture on his arm. It wasn't just your wrist. He broke his wrist and his forearm. And so here I am less than 24 hours later back at the hospital. So
you could start asking questions.
Yeah, exactly. That was exactly my point. I said, they're going to think I'm abusing my children. But Justin is pretty good. This last weekend, he took a really hard hit off the start. The gate dropped and he started, and like he was saying, one of his best friends, Tristan Moffitt, they raced together in the same class. Off the track, they're best friends, but when the gate drops, there's no friends anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So the gate drops, and Tristan drifted over just a little bit and took out Justin's front tire, and Justin slammed the ground super hard. Mm. His head bounced off the dirt. I've got it on video. It's a great video. And he got right back up and kept going. He fought his way from last place, and
there was 16 riders.
16 riders in that class. He fought his way back from a lap down, last place, all the way back up to fourth place. So that was an impressive ride for him.
But what do you say to like a parent who's listening and say, I don't want my kid to be hurt? You know, this sounds like the worst sport for them to be involved in. Like,
the wrong sport.
Yeah.
You know, getting hurt is part of the game. It's motocross. It's a tough sport. You have to be tough to, you know, participate in this sport, and the proper gear is essential.
Yeah.
You know, I make him, they make shin guards. I wear shin guards. Justin wears $600 knee braces. Mm-hmm. It makes it to where your knee can't bend left or right. Mm-hmm. You're not going to tear your ACL or anything.
Mm-hmm.
The proper equipment is essential.
Yeah.
And unfortunately in that scenario, the better the equipment, the more expensive it is.
Yeah, of course.
So Justin wears a top-of-the-line Bell helmet. It protects from concussions. It doesn't guarantee that you won't get one.
Yeah.
It just helps prevent them. He wears a chest protector in case the bike hits him on the back or the front.
Mm-hmm.
It prevents from breaking ribs, getting hit by rocks. His boots are $600 boots. They're not cheap mm-hmm. boots. They do sell, you know, cheaper motocross boots.
So give the pitch for why a parent would want their teen to be into this sport.
Because it's great for the kids. I mean, I have never seen one kid out there that races that gets in trouble in the off time.
Mm-hmm.
These kids, their whole life revolves around motocross. They love the sport. They love the atmosphere. They love the family environment. And that's what we do. We have barbecues out there. We have community events where we're helping the community. We raise mm-hmm. money for people that need help with a certain situation. And it's about family.
Yeah.
You know, we keep these kids together and we keep them occupied because if they're focused on the right thing, they can't think about the wrong things.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we want to do. I mean, it's expensive. It's just like hockey.
Right.
You know, parents have their kids play hockey, one, in hopes that they might go pro someday, and two, to keep their kids out of trouble, to keep them occupied on the right thing.
Well, this seems like, Justin, this seems like the thing, sort of sport that a teen is not going to get bored of, right? I mean, because it's so, for one thing, like, you've got a lot of responsibility in your shoulders when you're riding because it is dangerous.
Well, I mean, like, here and there I have, like, kind of drifted and, like, not really wanted to do it anymore. Uh-huh. But it's because, like, when you race up here, you're racing on the same track, the track can get boring.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I've been in classes where I've had, like, only two of the three kids to race. and it gets boring. And like when you're racing down in the States, you don't have just that one guy that you show up to the race and you're like, oh man, I have to beat that guy. There's 40 other kids that are racing with at each national down in the States that you have to worry about.
So you've been to these national races, huh?
I have not. I have not been down the States to race. I've watched like
pro. So that's a goal. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you? What's your racing been like, Jason?
It's been pretty good. I got a pretty rough start. I raced in the vet novice class and wasn't really doing too good. Was just mediocre, mid-pack. Uh-huh. And then something clicked with me and I started winning the vet novice class. So before I could even get that championship, they moved me up because I was winning too much. So they moved me to a more experienced class, which would be vet intermediate. I spent a year in that class and then I won the championship last year. So now I'm in the vet expert class and I'm racing with a lot of the older guys that have been racing in this state for 20 plus years. Mm-hmm. And they're great guys like Jim McLean and Ralph Blanchard and Aaron Athanas. I mean, these are great guys and they're super fast. And it's like putting a carrot in front of you. Mm-hmm. You know, you see these guys, and I was in the vet intermediate class, so I'm used to winning. Well, now I'm in the expert class, and I'm not winning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you're still chasing that carrot. These are the fastest guys in the state that have been racing in Alaska for 20-plus years. You want to catch those guys. Uh-huh. You want to pass them.
Yeah.
And it's just a great incentive. I mean, I liked winning, don't get me wrong, but, man, being in the expert class is absolutely amazing and it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. So we just have a little while left here, but tell me about somebody who's likes the sound of this and like goes out and watches maybe and wants to try it. How did somebody get into this short of like buying a bike, or do you have to buy a bike before you can do it?
Well, you can come out and watch all you'd like, but if you want to race, brand new bikes you can get at any motorcycle shop here in town. I mean, there's so many different brands. There's Yamaha, Kawasaki, KTM. Or if you're not looking to buy a brand new bike, you don't want to spend that kind of money, you can always go over to Craigslist and there's lots and lots of used bikes. Get yourself a bike, come out and practice. You know, the track is open to the public. You can practice as much as you want. If racing seems like your thing, you can always go to the Anchorage Racing Lions website. And
we'll have that up at outdoorexplorer.org so people can find that on our site.
You can. The schedule is always posted on the website. Anybody can come and sign up and race. If you want to race just for the day, pick a class. It's $35. You pay your $35 sign-up fee. You can race for the day. If it's something that you like, then you can sign up with the club, become a Lions member, and you can race the entire series.
Just as long as you have the right equipment.
As long as you have the right equipment. And we have a rule book that tells you what kind of equipment you need.
Uh-huh.
It's not a whole lot of equipment. The basic equipment that you need to race is a bike, but you need a helmet, you need boots, you need the racing pants and shirt, which is any kind of gear you want. They sell so many different kinds of gear, but it's got to be a long sleeve shirt and goggles. You know, I mean, you get those basic equipment and you can come out and race anytime you'd like.
Cool. Well, I you may get some new people coming out after they hear this. I don't think many people even know this is going on.
It's very true. Yeah. We got, I think, maybe 5 to 10 new racers last year that didn't even know the track existed. And that was from us putting out flyers and making the public aware that, hey, we are here. You know, you're more than welcome to come out and watch or race. And we had some brand new people come sign up and race the entire series that didn't even know the track was there.
Yeah, because people are probably coming from outside who've done it earlier in life, you know, and they get here and they want to try it here
too. Absolutely.
Yeah. Great. Well, I want to thank both of you guys for coming in. It's I learned a lot.
Yeah.
And we will make sure that website for the Anchorage Racing Lions is on our website, outdoorexplorer.org, if you want to learn more. Justin Nunn, a 15-year-old racer, thanks for being here.
No problem.
And Jason Nunn, president of the Anchorage Racing Lions, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
And stick with us as Outdoor Explorer continues.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
We're back. It's Outdoor Explorer, and we are talking today about motocross, which is a sport with a lot of people doing it today, and actually some of the top people in the nation. And we're going to introduce you to one of them in just a minute, and it's pretty surprising as to who he is. He's actually, I think, the youngest guest we've ever had on Outdoor Explorer. So my guests right now are Andy and Chase Anderson, and they've got a great story. The family built their own track. They're from Sutton, and Andy's the dad. He's been out there racing pretty much his whole life, and Chase is his son. Chase is 8 years old. Thanks for being here, Chase. Say hi.
Hi.
All right. And Chase is off to some national races. He's apparently really, really good at this. But let's start with you, Andy. So tell me about your, first of all, about your track.
Okay.
You guys actually went out and built a track just because you love the sport and there's no track there.
Yeah, absolutely. We were from Sutton, and the closest track was the Butte and Anchorage. And to compete at a sport like this, you got to be able to get a lot of training in.
Yeah.
And so we decided that, you know, we had some land that we homesteaded, our family homesteaded back in the 50s, and that we'd try to clear cut some of it and start building a little practice track. Over a couple of years, that turned into a little bit bigger track and a little bit bigger track. And
this is like one of those projects you get into and you never want to stop,
it's
right?
Been
you
a
make
blast.
It a little bit better, a little bit
exactly.
better.
Exactly. You can always see something a little bit better. And, but we have a lot of family, me, my sister, and my brother, all together. There's about 8 to 10 kids. And so we'll be out there chainsawing trees. They'll be bucking them up. They'll be starting a campfire, and we'll be over there dozing new jumps in. And so it really has become a family orientated track build, and all these kids and my sister and brother have all helped contribute to it a lot. So it's a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun as a family. You know, we invite a lot of people up to come camp and stay the weekend, and we are completely a nonprofit Sutton Racing Lions club, so we let a lot of other people come up.
So after the family got it started, then you formed a club.
Yeah, we formed Sutton Racing Lions. We're pretty proud of that. We try to do a couple food drives for the community. We're going to do a hat and clothes drive right before winter to donate to the local church and a couple things like that to try to serve the community. We do. It's completely free to come watch. The only thing you'll pay for is your entry fee into the race. So we really do try to provide a venue for Sutton and something for all these community members to come watch and do.
So with your own family track, how old were you, Chase, the first time you were on a bike?
I think I was 3.
And 2.5 with training wheels, 3 without training
wheels. I don't know many kids like who know how to ride a bicycle at that point, right? Much less a motorcycle. So it must be like a tiny little thing, huh?
Yeah, we actually had to have Grandma modify the gloves and modify some of the protective gear to make it fit him at that age. And it's not as simple as just grabbing a 3-year-old and putting him on a motorcycle.
Well, you know,
they have to grow up around the track and really get that kind of hardened, realize they when they fall over, they get up and they keep going kind of attitude.
They have
a big passion for riding.
Wiping out is part of the sport. Huh?
It is, yeah. Laying over and knowing how to wreck, you know you're going to wreck. It's not if, it's when, but providing yourself with the right protective gear will go miles on preventing injury.
Uh-huh.
Chase has gone all the way up to the national level now and jumping over 100 foot on his bike now. And
oh, my gosh, and you're 8 years old. That doesn't give you a heart attack as a dad?
It gives me a heart attack every time. Yeah. Just last weekend, I was trying to Facebook Live video him trying to keep my emotions out of the video and my hands steady while he's riding is the hardest thing to do.
Imagine, that would do.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
So tell us about the competition that you're going to be in, Chase.
Loretta Lenz is one of the biggest races in the world. It technically is just a really, really hard track with different parts, like sand track parts on it, and ruts.
And this is like the national championship. So what did you have to do to get there?
You have to qualify, a lot of qualifiers. Like, you have to qualify 3 or 4 qualifiers.
Okay, and then each one gets harder?
Yes, a lot. Each one gets really hard.
They start out with area qualifiers all across the country, and they're based off a region, Northwest, Central, all over the country. And so each part of the country will have about 8 to 10 area qualifiers. Those area qualifiers out of those 42,000 people, 4,200 will
42,000 people get started at the bottom of the pyramid, in other words.
And then 4,200 will make the regional starting gates. And so then there's only 12 regional races around the country. And out of each class, only 42 out of that will make the national championship starting gate. So out of 42 on the regional, on the area qualifiers, there's full gates of 42. Only the top nine qualify out of that race for the regional. And then you go to the regional, which out of 42, only top four make Loretta Lynn gate. Uh-huh. So top four out of every region of the country all come together in Tennessee for the national championship.
And that's Chase.
Yep, he just qualified with a third. And it was kind of a dramatic race. You know, he trains his butt off. But the hardest thing for us as Alaskans is going down there and racing on somebody else's home track and expecting to get top five with some of these fastest kids in the world.
Because those kids have been around that track 10 million times.
And yeah. He's got to adapt fast, and he's got to charge hard. And first moto in the regional, he took a 10th, and there wasn't much hope on qualifying with a 10th place first moto finish. So we went out there to the starting gate, and I told him just to have fun, don't worry about qualifying, take the stress off yourself and get down with your bad self, and show these guys what you can do. He went out there, took third or fourth out the whole shot, proceeded to get in first place and led the whole race and won the race.
Wow, way to go, Chase. That must have been really exciting.
And so then it was still kind of nerve-wracking because you're not sure if you're going to take top four with a 10 and a 1. Mm-hmm. They add the motos up, and that equals 11 points. And it just so happened that everybody else, how they placed with a second and a 13th and a third and an eighth, that our points added up to a third overall, and he qualified. So wow. It was pretty exciting. And just to show you the kind of level of competition that is there was 12 to 14 people that all had 2 minute 20 second lap times .xx, and Chase was in that 12 people. And so it's really about just who gets out front first, who has a really smart race, and that's what Chase did out there that day. It was his day.
Way to go. When did you know you were going to win that race?
At the starting gate, that race, so I came out in like fourth or fifth, like my dad said, and I go on the first corner, go over these a few rollers, and then the first placer just balls it, and he was knocked out. And so this other kid named Jesse James, he got knocked off the track, and that's how I got in first.
Wow. So everybody else goes down, and you're there. You're in good shape.
Yeah, he was in good shape and had a good line, wasn't following people around the track. There's a lot of tactics that come into putting yourself in a position to be in first. A lot of people will follow the leader, follow the person into the fast lanes. Chase is really good at staying outside those lanes and trying to make passes to where if they boggle, he can get around them. And that was exactly what happened there. He had a good line choice that wasn't following everybody else through the corner, and the first three guys all balled up on each other. And stacked up. Was the first guy went down, they stacked up, and he had a different lane and was able to get in front.
Okay.
Yeah, one.
There was also a very big jump on the track that was about 80 foot. And the day before,
For 8-year-olds.
Yeah, Chase was the only one hitting the jump the day before. And then he hit it three times in practice. And at a national level, Chase is one of the ones that sets the standards on jumping. Everybody else at the track goes, oh man, that kid just did that. We got to too, that means. And
wow.
So this was kind of the same scenario. We went there and there was one huge jump and there was one other kid trying it. He did it one time and came up short a little bit and then didn't try it again. And Chase did it three times. And the fourth time he did it, he wrecked. He landed off the side of the jump just a little bit and flew over the handlebars and wrecked. And I spent about 6 hours that night till about 3-4 in the morning fixing the bike, getting the suspension all back
together.
Didn't
have to fix the kid. The kid was okay.
And he jammed his clutch and broke his rear bushings out of his rear shock. But by 8:30 a.m. in the morning, we had it ready to go for practice.
Were you scared to get back on the bike?
No.
No?
And
no.
So this is where he's the true champ, because when he went around on that moto, then when he went around first lap and he was in first place, he did that jump. And that just shows you the true character and, you know, how much He really wants it. You know, he wrecked on that jump before. He knew he could do it. He knew nobody else was doing it. He was in first. But that doing that jump, that 80-foot jump on that little bike, was what gave him the gap, the room to ride really smart the rest of the track. And so he wasn't charging beyond his skill set. It gave a nice, you know, 3-second gap between first and second every time he would do it. And he was able to ride really smart around the rest of the track and stay up. And when everybody has that close of lap times, that's mm-hmm. just that important. That
did you get scared at all doing this, Chase, or do you just don't even get scared because you're so used to doing it?
I usually, like, on a really big jump that I've never done before, I'm scared to do it. But then once I do it, and I do it like 3 or 2 times each over and over again, do it perfect, then I'm fine with it. I'm not scared anymore.
Do you think that's because you have spent so much time on your track at home that you've gotten really confident?
Yeah, actually, we have a big jump at our track. It's like 70 foot. I can't clear it on a 50. I can only clear it on a 65, even though there's a huge downhill to
65cc bike, in other words. Yeah,
Husqvarna 65. Blew up my KTM.
So, this must be really expensive for you guys. I know you're an electrical contractor, and but even so, I mean, you're traveling all over the country. You've got a lot of bikes to build and maintain and buy and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. How do you manage all that?
Well, we do get a lot of support, and which is absolutely key. Moose Racing sponsors them from head to toe. There's local shops like AK Bedliner and Hartley Motors that all actually throw him cash to get on his graphics kit, and all that helps. We wouldn't have been able to buy the new bike. We went down there, we were trying to qualify, and we realized we were outbiked, and we're pulling up to in a rental van, pulling a bike out of the back, and we're sitting next to people with multi-million-dollar motorhomes with a picture of their kid on the side, 5 bikes that are homeschooling, and you know, so we're definitely outgunned and outnumbered, and as an Alaskan,
so these people are like their whole life is oriented
to
motocross.
Exactly,
yeah.
And you know, they have all that, but what they don't have is the heart and passion that Chase has, and you can't replace that. A motocrosser has to have the desire and the passion and the just straight. He has to absolutely be having fun out there. Mm-hmm. A lot of times when Chase is in the air, you can hear him screaming "woohoo" in his helmet.
Really?
Because he loves it so much. That's what he's doing. You know, and that's what the fact that he loves it that much is the reason he puts so many hours in.
Yeah.
And can do it. But the financial aspect of it, we get a little bit of help here, but there's no doubt about it. It is financially draining. This is our third trip out of state in 4 months. He's gotten 2 new bikes, and both those we financed and got a little bit of help from people, and racing locally can be pretty cheap, and you know, because we're all volunteer nonprofit clubs and we're all kind of out for the best in the growth mm-hmm. of the sport. But once you hit the national scene, your entry fees jump up from $30 locally to $150 per class, and then by the time you get the hotel rooms and the rental cars and the bike there, you're starting to get a couple of $1,000 trips a piece. We've been doing really good this year at supporting him and getting the proper support. My electrical contracting business has been doing pretty good, and but this Nationals Loretta Lynn's trip is proving to be a challenge for us. We got it's going to be about
Kentucky,
a $10,000 trip to Tennessee.
Tennessee. Uh-huh.
Yeah. By the time we get the motorhome rental in at a couple grand and $1,000 in entry fees for the national championship and parking. With $850 to $900 plane tickets a piece for the family, it starts to add up pretty quick.
Yeah, geez.
So we did start a GoFundMe page this trip for the national championships for him. You can check that out.
Just for Chase's name, Chase Anderson.
Yep, Chase Anderson, and you can check out Valley Rally Raceway on Facebook, or Andy Anderson. That's me on Facebook, and we got
Valley Rally Raceway. Is that what it's called?
Okay. Yep, Sutton Racing Lions and Valley Rally Raceway.
It's Outdoor Explorer. We're talking about motocross today, and we have a potential national champion in the studio who is 8 years old. So I'm sure there's national champion in different classes, but this is our Alaskan who is going to be going to Tennessee to do this racing. And it's from a family who has their own motocross track, which I think is such an Alaskan thing to build a motocross track on your homestead. Andy Anderson is the president of the Sutton Racing Lions, and his son is Chase Anderson, and my name is Charles Wolforth. So, Andy, take this back all the way to the beginning, because it sounds like this has totally taken over your family, right?
Yes.
And there was, like, where was the first seed planted?
I'd say when one of my sister's boys wanted a motorcycle, and he got into it, and he's seen pictures of me as a kid racing on the wall with some of my plaques on the wall.
Oh, so you did it when you were a kid.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's the seat all the
yes,
way back
okay,
there.
They go so all the way back. My mom and dad definitely had us into motocross when we were kids. We were 3 to 5 years old also racing.
In Sutton.
Yep, and we had a track back then that Jim Pasinic ran on his property, and that was my parents were very involved in running, and we ran in Sutton. It was part of the state championship series also. So we had a place we could go to locally and get out of trouble and have some fun, and that's what this was about for us. Is
but you won some races, obviously.
Yeah. Me and my brother were both state champions at one time.
Okay.
And so we had a lot of fun with the sport, and we realized how, you know, a lot of our friends that grew up without so much passions took a different path. And so then as we got a little bit older, we started to realize that that Sutton doesn't have anything like that anymore, and that was part of the reason we wanted to bring our private track to the public, to get something for everybody to do.
Give kids something to do that's positive.
Yeah. Even if they can't afford the bike, they can come up and watch for free and hang out in a productive environment. Yeah.
And you still riding and racing yourself?
I am, yes. When my bike maintenance and financial situations play out, I'm not too all in on Chase, yeah. And we have a lot of fun with it, though. And I'll throw in every once in a while into a race. I did win the Vet State Championship last year.
Oh, congratulations.
So that was a fun run.
Having your own track has got to be a huge edge, because you could just like practice whenever you want, right?
Yep, it is. It is pretty nice. There's
is this like an everyday thing for you guys?
It's been a battle with the borough. We still currently are fighting the borough on legality of our track and being open, and they're trying to designate us as a commercial racetrack and want us to put $12,000 worth of engineering and stamp drawings on our track and stuff. And so we're fighting with the borough right now on that. We are getting on the same page with them and talking to assembly members and going to make law that works for our facility and the public.
Because you're not making any money from it.
No, that's what's kind of lame. It's just how they designated a commercial racetrack. They designed it to be around a NASCAR track in downtown Palmer, and we're a small group of people that goes and rides on a private property in Sutton, but if you really read the code, it actually could be designated as a commercial racetrack because we have permanent structures and stuff on site, and we live on site, and there's a lot of things that aren't in the racetrack regulations. They don't expect somebody to live at a racetrack and things like that, so they kind of the permanent facilities and the wording is not really designated for a niche thing like we got out there. So the borough understands that, and the assembly members are working on it right now and working on kind of writing code that works for the borough and for us.
Well, Sutton's a pretty small community. How many people can be involved in this in like such a small town?
We have 55. Last year we had 45 Sutton Racing Lions members. This year I believe we're up into the 60s.
That must be a significant proportion of the population.
Yeah, we have, you know, there's about 80 to 100 kids that go to Sutton Elementary School. And so I think we have a 5,000 population last time I checked.
Okay, that's and more so, than I thought.
Yeah. We did... so there is a little bit of community impact that we could have, you know, and some a lot of support that we could gain from it to show the borough that we've got support, and there's a lot of people in Sutton that are for the track. It's a pretty awesome thing we got going on for the community.
So the sort of the hazard part of it, or the danger, is what most parents listening would think, like, oh my gosh, how could you let your kid do that? And so talk a little bit about how you mitigate the hazards and the sort of what your philosophy is about that.
Sure. I'd say the most important thing on staying not injured is, one, of course, the protective equipment. A lot of people want to throw all their money into exhaust pipes and go fast parts, when in reality you should be throwing your money at the suspension and your protective gear. The suspension is the number one item on your bike that'll keep you safe out there. It won't buck you. If it can soak up a bump and instead of buck you off or kick you off the bike, then it'll soak it up, and that's just a huge important thing for not wrecking and safety. So I would say suspension tuning and your proper protective gear are the two most important things. Within the last 5 years, they've really come a long ways in helmet technology and neck brace technology and chest protector technology. Now, Chase's neck brace, chest protector, and helmet combos in the $1,500 range.
Wow.
You know, we didn't always have him in that high end of gear, but now that he's really jumping far and the forces are that his body can sustain are getting higher, we went and invested in some of the highest gear you can get. And they really have come a long ways. They pretty much made it to where the helmet The shell inside the helmet spins 20 to 30 degrees before the head even starts to spin, and there's little shocks all around the helmet.
Wow.
And so with these new helmets, the concussion rate's gone down by 75%. There hasn't been a major death in motocross via neck injury since the neck brace, because neck braces have come out.
Hmm.
So that's a huge advancement in technology. The first gen of neck braces were starting to break people's collarbones and where they were exerting the forces to, and now the new ones are putting it to the shoulder blades in the front of your body.
Hmm.
And so there's really just no injuries coming from those at all. When you land, your head gets hit, and the helmet goes against the neck brace, and it pretty much turns you into a little turtle shell. You have all the forces go out like you would on a football, hit a football pad right on your shoulders. That's where all the forces get taken to, even from your head.
Wow.
So you'll never jam your neck. You'll never twist your neck. It doesn't allow you to do any of that. The helmets, if you look at the helmet designs nowadays, the visors are designed to shear off at a certain force if they hit the ground, to stop rotational forces. They've just really come a long ways in technology.
Yeah.
The boots have built-in ankle protection and pretty much a brace and built into them with the cambering spot, and knee pads that go all the way up with a cambering ball. So he's pretty much armored up out there.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
He goes down hard sometimes, and you cringe, and then he gets up running for the bike, and you're like, wow, that gear is amazing.
How does that feel when you wipe out, Chase? I mean, does it hurt even though you're wearing the gear, or does it really protect you a lot?
It protects me, but it still hurts a lot. Like, the knee pads, it could break your leg still, even if you have them on, because they're made out of plastic, and they can just, if you land on your knee really hard or hit a rock with it really hard, it hurts a lot. Like, when you hit the chest protector that I have, the
knock your wind out of you?
Foam inside of it pushes on my stomach, and it could knock the wind out of me for a second, or it still hurts a lot. Like,
but then you still just jump up and jump back on your bike the way your dad says?
Yeah, sometimes you have to just walk it off as quick as you can, and get back on it and go.
Yep, the main thing we teach them is to, one, get off the track right away, because there's other riders that could be, you can get run over on. So obviously address your situation and make sure you don't have nothing really hurt. Two is you need to get on the bike again, because you're still racing. A lot of times, I'd say 99% of the time, you really don't have an injury. You just got a Charlie horse, or like the wind hit out of you, like he's saying, you know. And so you get back on the bike, and if you start to go and anything feels off weird or whatever, then you'd pull off the track. And that way, that's the safest way you can do that. Staying down, if you've obviously got an injury, you need to stay down, and the yellow flaggers will help it out. Or if you ever get knocked out, we keep the rider down. Don't let him move and stuff like that. But 99% of the time, the rider will be walking away from it and kind of walking off a Charlie horse, and get on their bike and go.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you really think about it, the injury rates aren't near as high as other sports. As you would think they are, but they really aren't. And if you look at football and baseball and every other sport, you know, the rolled ankles and concussions.
Or skiing or anything else.
Yeah, whatever you're doing at its extreme levels, you're going to get injuries. And
when your kid gets really good at something, then you have to face that.
Yes,
just like
those
novice,
sports, you know, you watch out what causes those, and you kind of mitigate them, right? And the main thing that can mitigate motocross injuries is riding your skill set. Now, that's where people try to,
beyond your capabilities.
Yeah, don't go beyond your capabilities. That's one thing we preach really big time. If you're starting to get sloppy out there,
sport,
you're starting to get a little loose out there, then you need to slow down. You know, and if somebody passes you and you're not, and they're beyond your skill set, you got to let them. You can't charge to them and expect to outride your skill set. That's when you're going to get injured.
Yeah. So, other family members who have proven to have like Chase's gift in terms of like getting up to this upper level?
I have Cruz, his little brother, is 3 years old and is right on track with Chase, following his footsteps and wants to ride 24/7. So I think I'm in for it again.
Yeah, really?
I don't think I'm getting out of the national level with him or anything. He's already riding a PW. And
what's that?
At 3 years old, it's a little 50 motorcycle, Yamaha 50, and he's able, at 3 years old, able to go around the full Kincaid track and the tracks, sand tracks, fully without training wheels. And so he's on his game, and he's got the mental toughness that Chase has and a great personality. He loves to ride, so I see him following the footsteps.
That's amazing.
The path is already paved a little bit for him. So we you know, when we first started racing out of state, we learned a lot of lessons with Chase when he was a young age. And now all those lessons will be already known for him. So he's going to have a little bit easier path.
He's going to have a stable,
gotta,
huh?
Yeah, he's still got to ride his butt off and continue to care about the sport and love the sport, because that's what is most important to us. Is that, yeah. You know, Chase has a really good chance of going pro with his skill set, but there's still very little chance. And so the most important thing about this for us is that we're having a time of our lives during this journey, that we're out of state, having fun together. We're doing other breaking free and going to Disneyland or wherever we can. That's cheap enough that we can afford to enjoy, even if it's just walking the beach and playing in the beach wherever we're at. You know, so we're making sure we're enjoying the ride, and I think that's the most important thing.
You must really have a lot of skill mechanically, though, to be able to work on these bikes and keep them running. Because I mean, and how many bikes do you have for like all these different sizes?
Yeah, Chase has we have about 13 motorcycles.
Wow.
That are all 50cc, and those are cruisies and chases, and those are just as you advance up and skill set, you get a kind of a little bit more suspension and a little bit more power.
Just the kids have 13 of them.
Yeah, and so we get to, he has one that we ordered for out of state. We had to order that directly from Cobra Factory, and they gave us a pretty good deal on it. We still had to pay cost of the bike and shipping. And so we got that bike, and it's a brand new bike with about 10 hours on it now, and that's his national championship bike. We had the motor built, had the suspension built and set for his weight, and haven't touched it since. And that's the bike he won the regional on. That bike's still sitting down in the States waiting for him to try to win a national championship on.
And when does that happen?
July 30th through August 10th in Tennessee. That will actually be broadcasted on live television also.
Oh, really?
So it'll be, and last time, this isn't his first adventure to national championships. 2 years ago, he won the Washougal area qualifier. Then he won the Washougal regional. And then we went to Loretta Lynn Nationals. This was kind of an eye-opener to us on how good he was. We knew he was good in Alaska. We just weren't sure on a national level if he could compete. So when we went out that first time and he won, we're like, oh, wow, I guess, you know, I guess we do need to keep doing this. You know? And then we went out to the regional and he won again. And we're like, holy cow, like we could win a national championship. A little kid from Sutton, Alaska could go there and do this, you know?
Yeah.
And so then we make it to Loretta's, and he ended up with a fourth, a fifth, and an eighth overall, for a fifth overall in the country out of 42 riders.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So how do you feel about that, Chase? Do you feel excited? Do you feel nervous? I mean, what are your, as you think about going into that race for the national championship, I mean, if you don't win, will you be like super disappointed?
Well, I was disappointed because right when I went to the finish line, I was in third. And so I passed the finish line, and what's dumb about this, they never told us, is that the transponder that counts how much laps and who wins or something, who gets second or third, two guys just zoomed past me, and I went over the finish line first before they passed me, and then I didn't know that the transponder was after the finish line. It's usually on the
finish
line.
It's like 20 feet in front of the finish line.
Wow.
And so we thought he took third, and if he would have taken third that moto, he'd have won a national championship.
Oh, wow.
And so that was kind of, he thought he won, so he was a little bummed about that situation, but after I told him how proud we were and what he'd just accomplished and the feature that even fifth in the country is an amazing feat.
It is amazing,
He started walking tall after that, but
he's
very driven and definitely does not like to lose. So,
we'll
stupid. Who would put that right there?
We'll be watching you guys and cheering for you from afar, and want to hear how all this comes out. Chase Anderson, he's 8 years old. He's headed to the national championship in motocross, and Andy Anderson, his dad, is the president of the Sutton Racing Lions, and. Sounds like a really interesting family. Thanks a lot for coming in, you guys.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for the interview.
So that's all for today's show. Our producer is Eric Bork. Our assistant producer who found these great guests for today's show is Hannah Duro. My name is Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal the Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.